IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 91 of the Killing It Podcast. All righty. So today we have some interesting topics, and we're getting ready for our end of year show. So make sure that you tune in every episode. We've got a really great fun thing planned for the end of the year. So how are you guys doing?
We are doing well, and we are preparing for the holiday season in the most responsible way that we know how. Very many digital appointments that are getting scheduled. I was saying to a customer the other day, the only way that I can tell officially that it's the holiday season now is that the color of the appointments on my calendar are changing from the work color to the family color, right? Because this week, I've got 200 conference calls, because evidently this is the week everybody's getting everything done before they take off for their vacation break. So everybody that needed a conference call has scheduled one this week. But then next week, all of the calendar appointments are a different color. That's a brave new world that we live in when I'm getting digital calendar updates from my mother.
Wow. Look at you. See, wow. My big shift was the fact that today was the first snow of the year, because it ended up being the very typical Washington slushy wintry mix, as opposed to an actual snowstorm that we were potentially predicted. But it did snow today.
Not frolic worthy, but you know.
It was the yucky gross version of snow,
right,
where
exactly.
Like it's wet and rainy and slush and gross, and it made the roads awful.
I'm already seeing the snow videos on YouTube, so it's snowing somewhere.
It's snowing all across the East Coast today, so now everybody knows when we record. But it's that's the big thing is the one weirdness also is we had to shift up a bunch of our holiday planning, of course, because this year it was all ship things versus deliver things by hand, and that made a big difference by a week of the planning. And in Sharon's case, like the baking of the cookies, that all happened way earlier. And the new criteria of, can you ship these cookies versus are they just tasty?
Right. I have a UPS box, right? So for a UPS store, for my official business address.
Right.
So every year I go in there and, I always like to keep track of, oh, so you guys super busy yet? Super busy yet? And they have been significantly less busy in terms of people coming in and shipping things, because people are going online and shipping things. But they have a new entire labor output that they didn't have last year, which is they now take all the Amazon returns.
Yes.
So you go in, you hand them a box and in a QR code, they scan your phone, and they just got like a pile up to the ceiling of things that need to be boxed up and shipped.
Right, things then disappear from my life.
Yeah, I will say, I know the human being who is responsible for the returns program at Amazon, and he is a busy individual, and probably better networked than you would imagine in different businesses and different countries all around the world. The reverse logistics in Amazon's world, that stuff ain't kidding. I'm glad
that human is a smart person.
Well, yeah. It's better than flying the airplanes back empty, right?
Exactly.
You might as well fill them up.
Exactly. It's environmental.
Exactly. Cool. All righty then. Well, so we're going to start off with kind of a fun topic today, which is artificial intelligence. Since we're able to do all this face recognition and whatever, I'm going to link to a couple of articles. One is a site called Twin Strangers, where you can look and see if you've got a stranger somewhere in the world that looks like you. I had to upload a couple photos to dial this in, found somebody who's supposedly 83% look-alike for me. Not sure anybody that I know would be fooled. But the YouTube video is really interesting, because starting about minute 20, they go into some of the technology they use, one of which is to have six cameras take photos of you from different angles all at the same time. And then between the two twins, they match up over 1,000 points of comparison on your face. And so, you know, again, this is one of these things where we're training the AI to get better and better across lots of cultures and races and so forth. So it's an interesting addition to the technology.
Well, and I shared one just for fun, which was Google's new play with singing blobs, if you haven't seen that particular one, which is good fun. I mean, I think if for me, like, it didn't find me in any interesting digital trend or physical twin or whatever it is. It just didn't work. So I say it's rubbish. But I love this perspective, this idea of taking data sets and providing insights, right? Like, I don't necessarily think that the example here is a particularly useful one, right? And it did work for me. That said, this is a process that I would never be able to get insight into on my own, right? I don't have the sample set. I don't have the ability to do it myself. And I love this ability where we can then run a data set through and give people access to insights they did not have before. These are fun examples, but that's the power of using these technologies. Again, I'm going to remind everybody, I do not think anybody is quote unquote selling AI as a general rule. What you are looking for is products and tools that have it that allow you to then get insights you didn't have before.
See, and that the model for adopting or deploying mass market, truly revolutionary technologies never begins with a fully formed product and a commercial application. Right. It begins with, hey, here's a toy, here's a game. It might be fun. And you test it out, you get a lot of mass market utilization, which creates a trove of data that can be analyzed and then further commercialized, right? If you remember, what was it? I don't know how many years ago when Farmville and such was really popular on Facebook, a game of you were a virtual digital farmer and you clicked on things to plant and things to harvest and whatever. And it's a game and it didn't have any serious application until you got inside of that architecture. And what you realized was that it was behavior and sentiment tracking in a machine learning type of a technology. That was what they were doing, was they were identifying based on what you saw and what you interacted with, what could they predict about what you would do next and what you might be open to from a marketing perspective. And once a gajillion people clicked on that a bajillion times, they had really, really smart algorithms that they could use in other commercial applications. Now, I will say personally, this one, finding my doppelganger, I've yet to use it, but I wouldn't be surprised, because 20 years ago, a very smart individual, when we were at an event one time, stood up after I had given a speech in front of a group of people, and their follow-up to it was, could Ryan look any more like Chandler Bing? And I can't count the number of times in my life I have been told, has anybody ever told you look like Chandler Bing? I'm not sure if I look like him as much as I sound like him, but I'm sure that every one of us has a true doppelganger out there.
Well, so this, according to the stats, right, 7 billion people in the world, there's a 1 in a billion chance there's somebody who looks just like you, which is to say, you got 7 doppelgangers, you just got to find them. And so I kind of like the crowdsourcing nature of this, because the people who choose to participate are not bound by having to been in a college class together, or being at a certain university, or within a certain city, or within a certain country, or within a certain, half of the globe, right? So it is truly people all over the world who are choosing to participate in this and finding connections. One of the most interesting things for me is that the YouTube video goes through this kind of a contest. I think the winners they picked don't look as much alike as this other couple of twins who are completely unrelated to each other, have no DNA in common, except the fact that they're not dolphins, right? They're humans. But, but the you know, there's a couple of others that everybody thought, oh, they look so much alike. And of course, they turned out to be like fourth cousins, right? That they didn't know. So anyway, it's just interesting.
But see, that's the thing. You hit it right there, Carl. People are volunteering to use it because it's fun and the reactions are A, harmless, and B, entertaining. The listeners to this program have heard our reactions to other deployments of facial recognition, and never have they been fun or entertaining. We've had some strident responses to the ethics and the realities of facial recognition in law enforcement and in commercial applications. This one, hey, it's fun. That's exactly how they're going to radically advance the technology, because people want to use it.
It's also, the one piece we've got to worry about with tech like this is the nefarious bit stuff, right? It's like, well, what are they doing with now they have the picture of my face? Like,
now that they've crowdsourced it, what are they doing with the data?
Yeah, the plot of many daytime movie or a cheap B Hollywood movie.
but it's also kind of, except it's actually playing out in real life. Like there are plenty of examples now where because it cost me nothing, I am clearly the product, and find out a year, 2 years, 5 years later, oh, wait, they're doing, you know, all of these nefarious things with my data.
Well, now, that's what I was going to say is that the one of the interesting pieces is that what the computer comes up with to say that A is a doppelganger for B is different than what human beings would come up with. And I think it's quite interesting when you say, okay, you say there's an 83% match here, but I don't think this person looks anything like me. Why does the computer think that? And human beings are absolutely different in how we assess one another's faces than machines are. And at least today, AI is not winning the war. So I wouldn't count on the machine being able to graphically generate something that looks like me that you would put on a wanted poster.
But to Dave's point, this might just be a massive resource database for deepfake videos.
Oh, but then I immediately go, well, there's plenty of sources for all that. Like
you went outside. They already have basis
for that. So no shortage of need for that. All right, cool. So topic number two.
Topic number two, this one is on the other end of the spectrum, right? It wasn't for fun, but it's way more serious than people thought that it was, and the lessons that we take away. So let me tee it up really quick, right? The article that we're linking to is an analysis of Google's downtime that happened just the other day. And the takeaway that this writer is having on it, anytime you can write a serious article and get both a 1984 reference and a Matrix reference into it, I'm down, right? Like, you already got me. I'm going to read this thing. But
his takeaway is, go with the current references.
Yeah. His takeaway is everything is connected to everything, and one outage has a surprising domino effect on all of the things that you are using. When Google goes offline, it's not just your ability to search, but there is mail, there is calendar, there is classroom, there is yada, 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 up to and including the temperature in your house. If, like Dave, you are a modern person who has automated many of these things, if you are on the Nest platform and Google goes down and it's really cold in your house, start a fire, because that's now an interconnected and dependent service. I'm not an alarmist on this in the sense that, like, oh no, they're into too many things. I'm a realist in the sense of we should probably pay attention to the single point of failure concept in our digital world. Thoughts from you guys. What was your reaction? What do you take away?
Well, so there is a certain degree of overreaction to the article, right? So the you know, there's these reports of incidents like the Nest one, and part of me, I'm a user on this, and I can still change the temperature on my device.
You just have to get up and walk across the
room. Right, I got to get up and walk to the dial, like, you know. And so, you know, there's this element of they're supposed to build into the systems failovers for when connectivity is a problem. Like, look, yeah, sure, I can't change it remotely when my internet connection is down. But you know what? I also can't change it when the power goes out. Like but what I do want is I want systems that are resilient enough that they are not so dependent in critical junctures. So for example, I don't want when the internet goes down, my heating to stop working, but sure. Am I able to control it remotely? No. And if I'm not at home, well, yeah, I'm kind of out of luck. That's the resilience that needs to be built into these systems and tested for in the right circumstances. Again, my losing the ability to change the temperature in my house when the internet goes down, or the power goes down, and not hugely critical, right? But that might be hugely critical in, say, a commercial refrigerator situation, right. Or I don't know, they're rolling out these vaccines right now that really need
intense temperature controls. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Last I checked, we should all be thinking about that. Like there are these bits that we need to think through. And that's the stuff that I want to make sure both the designers of the products and the implementers have taken into account.
It's interesting. So as odd as it sounds, I had a flashback when I was reading this to when I was a kid. And I remember people saying, because I'm old, right? But I remember people saying, well, I wouldn't get electric windows on my car because what happens if you go in the water and then you can't roll down the window? And I'm like,
isolated use case. Right?
That was a serious concern. That was an argument against electric windows in 1970.
So, you know, I've been gifted two little tools to break glass by my parents over the last 20 years. Like this is clearly a problem.
They grew up in fear of the electric window. That's what I'm saying. But so my favorite line in all of this is, most people in the Matrix take the blue pill. They go back to, the computer generated prison. And, I don't, obviously this guy's a civil rights attorney. So, he's got a different view of
bias. Right.
But I don't know that I would feel that I'm in much of a prison when it's like, oh, crap, I have to stand up and go change the channel. It's same thing happens when the batteries are dead, right, in your remote control. I don't have as much automation as Dave, but I had an interesting experience. So last week, we were scheduled to have our power out for 4 hours. And I said, oh, well, I don't have anything else to do. I'll just take a run down to the store. So I, of course, can't open my garage door to get the car out, right? So I had to, pull the lever and lift up the door and so forth. And then I started laughing at the fact that my daughter got a new garage door opener, not because hers doesn't work, but she wanted one that works with Amazon and comes with a battery backup. So my daughter could open her garage door when the electricity is out, even remotely, but I could not.
See, but that's the thing, right? If you multiply this conversation by the two topics that are underlying it, the IoT world of how many of everything is going to be interconnected and internet as a utility, then the implications go beyond not just your temperature and walking across the room or opening your garage, but quite literally everything, right? How many years ago was it when we first argued that the internet is a utility and as such, it is essential to the functioning of modern life? And back then, everybody was like, pshaw, you just want to be able to read articles or play video games or watch videos, and that's not serious. That's not like electricity in the sense that it's life-saving. But I wonder if a parent at home right now with a student who is doing distance learning feels that maybe always on, always available internet is in fact a utility that is critical to the functioning of modern life. It gets to that level. And then you start to attach every freaking device that mankind can imagine with a sensor over the internet and the IoT. At some point when Google eventually owns everything that Amazon doesn't own, and one of them goes offline for the day and everything stops working. I mean, I believe in the IoT. I buy that philosophy. I think it's phenomenal capabilities until it all stops working all at once.
Yeah, but it's the big brains about designing the resilience in, which is important, right? Oh, and by the way, my big brain should be code also for big bucks. Like your expertise right. In figuring those conditions and use cases out and thinking through the ways that it will be used, the ways it will be misused, the ways it will be used for very nefarious purposes, and the ways it can be resilient are the reason you will make the real money versus the money of plugging it in and making it work. And thinking that through and being conscious of that all the time, because by the way, you can unlock a lot of, you know, really important end pieces. I'll give you a fun one, because I know we've been living with home automation enough, because my wife came to me with an idea yesterday saying, you know, we have one cat who lives in our basement and is deaf. And so she has to see us to know that we're home. She had the very intelligent idea saying, hey, you know, we should set it up that when we come into the house, the light in your office, where she often sleeps, comes on. Because then she'll know people are home based on the change, and we might see her more often. Ooh. And it's like, okay, this is advanced thinking, right? This is very smart advanced thinking. But by the way, by having spent time on this, this is a user of the system, not an implementer, now so used to it that they can imagine other use cases.
She's thinking in terms of what is possible, not in terms of like, it's not some way out there kind
no,
of thing.
And has identified a situation that can get resolved with this.
Like, well, and then it's not a product that she's buying, it's a platform that she is using to develop her own custom services. The shift from product to platform, that's very important.
Right. Now, admittedly, the platform she's using is called her husband that has to do the coding. But
you know, go do that.
Right. You go do this work, Dave. But the example is totally valuable, because this is where you've done a really good job in implementing and teaching and making it seamless, your users will start driving the needs and the direction. And that's the other portion of this, is because when you're having those conversations and are known as a go-to for the business outcome, now you've really unlocked massive value, because your value is based off of, you're the person that I know can solve all these problems, versus like, hey, I need to worry about the plugs on these things. That's all phone line.
And that sounds like a very local application for our listening audience. You are the person who ought to be that for all these systems to your customers. Oh, and by the way, in the spirit of when everything goes offline and people can't get access to their stuff, please remember to keep a local backup of all of your data. No single points of failure. Come on.
Or multiple backups. Like, they don't have to necessarily be local. They just have to be in more than one location. Like, it's
exactly
however you do.
We're done with that topic, except to say, I just had a conversation with my brothers over the weekend. We talked about how many kinds of backups each of us have and what we're using. So that's the 21st century.
That's now dinner time conversation
for the holidays. Let's compare backup strategies. Well, with that, let me revisit our life after pandemic series a little bit with this last topic. We're referencing a New York Times article talking about the need for vaccination records and how HealthPass apps could reopen portions of business and economy, but they also have some downsides. So if you think out to the post-pandemic world, we're going to need to get to a point where you can demonstrate you've been vaccinated, right? That's going to be, there's going to be multiple circumstances where that will be needed in order to help manage the spread, as well as to allow things to happen in a more accelerated way. And because if you've been vaccinated, you're no longer part of the mesh that's spreading it all around, and thus you can do other things, but you don't want to be a carrier and you don't want to expose still to people that are at risk. There's a discussion going around about the fact that, you know, of course, historically, you know, back in the 1880s, there was literal pieces of paper there where you would have to show vaccination records that moved into a document known as the yellow card in the 1960s in that time frame. And even now you theoretically have to show versions of it at certain airports. But now, as we think about this, we're going to have to come up with the technology solution. Some private companies are already starting to think about this with an app called Common Pass, which is going to be used by airlines for this problem. But this has, of course, privacy concerns, and it has concerns over a have and have not style society. So it's a great read. I'm going to dive it in. Guys, I'm throwing this one out and go, so where are your first reactions on a tech
as,
like this?
As an international traveler, I don't know how Ryan feels about this, because we both travel a bit. But my first reaction was, I think every country I go to is going to want to see this. So separate from HIPAA, separate from my personal liberties, separate from whatever I might want, I can see CLEAR or even the federal government including this digitally in my passport or some other information. To me, it's sort of like, you want to get on a plane. I don't think you have any options. But I do have to say, I acknowledge that there are people who are very sensitive to personal data and HIPAA and all of that. I'm kind of not as sensitive as most people. If you need to find out about a goiter or whatever that I might have, then I don't care, you know. But if that's what it takes to get me on a plane, I'll do it.
See, and this is the thing, right? I am surprised there's not already something like this specifically in the venue of international travel, like you mentioned, Carl, because when all of this started happening with the pandemic this time around in March, right, I had been in China in the first week of January and came back out. It was prior to any of the announcements, and there was no quarantining, there were no restrictions. And somebody said, well, were they already doing things when you were there? And my response was no. I've been to China very many times over the years, and more than half of the times I've been screened, I've been temperature scanned, I've been disinfectant sprayed, right? Because they are very proactive about that kind of control at the border. Once you're in the country, nowhere near as much. But coming in, I'm actually legitimately surprised that we don't already have a digital pass for international travel. But this stuff hits home in a very individual local way. Just the other day, my son and I, we went out to lunch at an outdoor venue. We had to just like let them know, and they came and they seated us. But even though it was outside, even though it was all socially distant, even though, you know, they followed the protocols exceptionally well, very proud of that restaurant and happy to patronize them. The very first thing they did was a forehead temperature scan. They came up and said, basically, if you don't meet this, you don't get to come on to our premises. And I had this little reaction of, I hope they let me in. I wasn't sick. I wasn't feeling anything. I had no reason to believe. But then it was like, oh, I'm sorry. You are now no longer allowed into this facility. And somebody made the comment of, man, imagine what it's going to be like going to a concert in the future, where you've got a ticket in hand, you have paid and you are there, and you may or may not get in based on this next level. The digital passport, this certificate, begins to be more proactive, right? So you know before you go whether or not you are qualified, but one way or another, whether it's proactive or reactive, we will live in a world where we will have people who are allowed in and those who are not allowed in for digital and medical reasons.
Look, I geek out at the possibilities on this. I do love the idea. And I'm a big, I'm a big Apple Health user, and I've got all my stuff integrated. And even my doctor is always just sort of like, wow, you know, you can pull up, you've got all your records like on your phone.
Right.
But I do look at this and say, you know, I wish there was more thought to making this flexible, portable, and more obviously secure, you know, in terms of the fact that I wish this was a little bit more interoperable. I've been seeing a physical therapist recently for some hip stuff, but that's their systems don't tie to anything else, right? So they're not part of my overall system.
Which was actually part of the promise of medical records.
Yeah, the EMR thing was supposed to solve that. Integration is hard.
Yeah, well, I mean, HIPAA was, right? And then it didn't. And so you look and say, like, there's so much on all of this. I do worry about the pieces of leaving people behind with these kinds of technologies. You know, I want to make sure that we are rolling this out for the same reason that I want everyone to get the vaccine, because that's how it works most effectively. I also want to ensure everyone has access to the ability to move around and to, you know, be able to get access to things, because that's part of the way the system works best. And I want to make sure that we do think about these things as consequences.
Well, and, you know, I started talking about traveling. So I get that I don't have any rights when it comes to getting into Singapore or Australia or the UK. It's not my country, and they can require whatever they want. And we, those of us who travel have all gone through that with Zika and with Ebola, right? Have you been in, you know, Western Africa, right? And so this is the next level. The thing about this is they're talking about this pass within the United States. Can you go into the state of Nevada? Can you go into Oregon, Washington, whatever? And so I think a lot of people are going to be very uncomfortable with that.
Well, and a digital version ultimately of no shirt, no shoes, no service, right? Like individual businesses can say, well, no, you can't come here. Up to and including the television commercial I saw this morning for a certain airline that was making a very good-hearted way of delivering the message of, if you don't wear a mask, you are not allowed to fly on this airline. And you're like, okay, people can choose or not choose, and my freedom and all of that stuff that's involved, except that it's a private enterprise and they can choose to refuse service to anyone they wish.
Let's be careful to separate out thing, you know, government access versus private access. Right. I know there's a balance too, because by the way, the government is here to make sure, as I always allude to, that, you know, we have clean water. We all like clean water. There are lines where they make sure that we have resources like that. There is a place for them to be in the conversation, but we need to differentiate between government moves versus private business. For example, flying is a private enterprise. They can choose, you know, how they run that within the guidelines that we set as public safety.
And I'm hoping there's an opportunity for people who do tech support for individual companies to figure out what can we do technologically to help our clients implement something to do this as effectively as possible and to make their businesses work as smoothly as possible in 2021.
Very tactical. True. Very tactical.
All righty. Well, I think that will do it for episode 91 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.